House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:20 p.m. on February 22nd. Members present are Representative Ledoux, Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, and myself, Chair Olson. Let the record reflect we do have a quorum. Please turn off your cell phones. We have one item on the calendar today, House Bill 304, electronic tax returns, tobacco, and e-cigs tax. We heard the bill presented by the administration on Friday. Today we're going to be taking testimony by invitation only. On Wednesday we'll begin taking public testimony. I encourage anybody that's listening that cares to testify on this bill either today or on Wednesday to submit written testimony to hlac@akleg.gov, and it will become part of the permanent record on the bill. We have at least three stakeholders today, and I believe we'll start out with Marjorie Stone King. Are you with us, Marjorie?
Yes, sir, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation, and thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. My name is Marge Stone King. I'm the Executive Director of American Lung Association in Alaska. And I just wanted to provide a little more information to the committee from a public health perspective about why we do tobacco tax increases and what the impact is in terms of public health. So a government increasing a tobacco tax is justifiable because you are offsetting the cost incurred by tobacco to society. So according to the Alaska Tobacco Prevention and Control Program, $20 in smoking costs, direct medical costs, are incurred by each pack of cigarettes. So compare that to the current state tax of $2 per pack, $20 versus $2. If you look at it that way, we have a long way to go in terms of margin to be able to raise the tobacco tax justifiably. So the other reason we do these in terms of public health impact is because they reduce tobacco use, and they do so most effectively on our most price-sensitive demographics in our population, and that is first and foremost youth. So every 10% increase in the price of tobacco, price of cigarettes or other tobacco products reduces the number of kids who smoke by 6 or 7%. The next largest demographic is among low-income folks. So low-income folks are going to be price-sensitive like youth are, and that is the track record that tobacco taxes across the country have proven out. Low-income folks smoke at a higher rate than the general population.
Excuse me, Marge, will you take a question?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
So I think what I'm hearing you say is that one of the benefits of this is that it's so regressive and that it targets low-income people. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
No, when I say price-sensitive, I mean that tobacco tax affects that population in a good way in terms of tobacco consumption. So they are more likely to cut down their tobacco use and more likely eventually to quit. So the impact in terms of reduced tobacco use is highest on youth and then on low income.
Well, that follow-up.
I believe that contradicts the doctor that was here at the last meeting, doesn't it?
I think it actually also contradicts the sponsors of the bill who indicated that there wouldn't be much effect on the number of people smoking, and that's how they did their statistics.
Please continue, Ms. Stone King.
I'm sorry?
Oh, please continue.
Okay, will do. Let's see. So the costs of smoking on direct medical costs, again, $20 as compared to $20. So that's why we do tobacco taxes in general. Here in Alaska, we've had two tobacco tax laws implemented in 1997 when we were at that point the highest tax in the nation, and then again in 2004. And what you'd see if you look at the data in terms of tobacco consumption is that we fell below the national average on tobacco consumption. following each of those price increases. And that's the direct effect of raising a tobacco tax. In terms of adults, they generally cut down tobacco use and then eventually quit. Kids typically don't pick it up in the first place. So now I want to just talk to you a little bit about, and I'm sorry, there is a formula for estimating Medicaid savings associated with that decline in tobacco use. And I can request that our data be put into that formula, but I don't have those numbers for you today.
We're probably going to have the bill for a few more days. If you could get that up to Conrad, we can put it in part of the record. Representative Hughes.
Yeah, I just need clarification. You mentioned, Marjorie, something about $20 for medical costs. Can you go over that again? Based on so much spent on cigarettes, so much is needed for medical. Go over what that
is? So the direct medical cost of tobacco use in Alaska is $370 million a year, and allocated out to how many packs of cigarettes are sold in our state, that comes out to $20 per pack. Does that make more sense?
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely.
Please continue.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to address electronic cigarettes or electronic nicotine delivery systems. So these are a newer product. As you know, we don't have the long-term data in terms of how taxes on these devices affect decreased consumption. However, it appears that they will follow suit with tobacco reductions as well. Here in Alaska, only 4% of adults use electronic cigarette products, and 85% of that 4% of adults who use them in addition to regular or traditional cigarettes. However, 18% of our kids are using electronic cigarettes, and this is the first year that we've had that data here in Alaska on electronic cigarettes, but nationally what we've seen is a ninefold increase in...
Representative Hughes?
Yes, thank you. You're giving us a lot of food for thought here. Of the 85% who use e-cigarettes and cigarettes, how many of those are in the process of trying to quit regular cigarettes?
So this is derived from an Epi bulletin on electronic cigarette use in Alaska. It says that... I'm just reading the details on that. 14% of current cigarette smokers and 1% of non-smokers reported current use. 72% of dual users reported using e-cigarettes in place of combustible cigarettes, either as a way of reducing use or to use when smoking is not allowed. So it's not clear. I don't know if the state is able to break that down any further.
Representative Hughes.
Could you please repeat the sentence about the 85% and then the 72% I went, because it seemed like they contradicted each other.
Sure. 85% of adult e-cigarette users also reported being current cigarette smokers. And then 72% of that 85%, so 72% of the dual users reported using e-cigarettes as a way of reducing combustible cigarette use or to use in places where smoking is not allowed.
Follow up?
I'm good now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please continue.
Thank you. So, as I was saying, nationally, e-cigarette use among youth has increased between 2011 and 2014 ninefold. And again, 18% in Alaska is compared with 4% adult. And I emphasize that because this is a youth epidemic, if you will. Youth using e-cigarettes, it's growing, and it's a completely unregulated product. So you've heard, I'm sure, that there are claims from e-cigarette purveyors of cessation use. And you've also heard, I'm sure, on the flip side, that they are not an approved cessation device. by the FDA. So, in fact, they're not regulated at all, and they aren't regulated as a cessation device. Historically, when these came out, the tobacco industry actually sued the FDA to be considered a tobacco product, not a pharmaceutical. And it's also worth noting that since then, there has been no independent e-cigarette company who has filed with the FDA to be considered a cessation product. The other trend that we're seeing, besides large youth use with electronic cigarettes, is that kids who are using electronic cigarettes go on to use traditional cigarettes. We're actually seeing a similar trend now in adults in terms of never smokers and smokers who have been quit for 5 years or more taking up the use of e-cigarettes. So this is all to say that they should be taxed equivalently as another tobacco product, similarly to other to cigarettes and other tobacco products. They should be taxed similarly. And that is my testimony, and I'm happy to take any further questions.
Representative Hughes.
Yeah, I realize I don't know what a cost a pack of cigarettes costs. I know that this would put a $3 tax on a pack, and I know e-cigs would be go from a 0% tax to a 100% tax. So I'm just wondering how that compares to what's being proposed for a package of cigarettes, and maybe you don't know that. Maybe that's a Department of Revenue question. But
do we have any smokers on the committee?
Well, I'm not a smoker, but I witnessed something firsthand on Saturday. And thank you. So I was at the Fred Meyer. There's a separate part of Fred Meyer where people purchase alcoholic products, and I happened to find myself there. There was a gentleman in front of me who purchased. There was a gentleman in front of me who purchased a pack of cigarettes, and I was very attuned to it and talked to the, both saw the register and talked to the salesman. It was a 25 cigarette pack rather than 20, so a little bit wider. It was about $11. And I had a question, I did a little dialogue with the retailer about it, and I think we were told essentially it would be a dollar additional. In that pack it would be, I guess, $1.20 or something. I think that.
Yeah,
a lot of money.
A follow-up. It is very expensive. I'm wondering, and maybe the Vaping Association will be able to tell us whether the e-cigs, it almost seems like they might be taxed higher, but because I don't really know what those products cost, I do remember hearing that the 100% wholesale tax would make a $70 kit about double, so... It just seems like the that might be a higher rate, but maybe we'll hear about that later, Mr. Chair.
I have a question for Ms. Stone King.
Representative Josephs.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Stone King, Andy Josephs, and I have the strongest hunch and even a presumption that e-cigarettes are dangerous. However, shouldn't there be some dispositive, definitive proof that they are? And do you have a source? If the answer is that you think you have that proof, what is that source?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. So, you know, in terms of health effects, we know immediate health effects. We aren't going to have long-term health consequences for several decades like we did with tobacco use. However, we know that this is a tobacco-derived product, that it's being marketed very, very similarly to how tobacco products are being marketed and that it's used in the same way. So, therefore, it should be taxed like a tobacco product.
Follow up, Mr. Josephson?
No. I was looking for something more satisfying.
Representative Ledoux.
This is actually a comment rather than a question. I mean, I have a little bit of a problem with the idea that some taxes are regressive, like a sales tax. A general sales tax would be regressive. And you could argue that maybe a sales tax is a better tax because it taxes everybody, and even if it's regressive, maybe you still should have a sales tax. But I've got a little bit of a problem with testimony, which is actually talking about how this is such a great idea because it actually targets poorer people because they're the people who are going to be the most price sensitive on something. So, you know, I just have problems with that.
Actually, on Friday.
May I respond?
Oh, certainly.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. I appreciate that at face value, and I just also want to point out that that the low-income population has a cost to the Medicaid program, and also smokes at a higher rate, and again is at a cost to the Medicaid program. And it's my understanding we're looking for cost savings in that area.
I'm representing Ledoux's point. I believe we had the director of the tax division state that it was regressive several times on Friday, both geographically and on income as well.
I think that the difference between this tax and other taxes is that that this tax has a public health benefit, which comes with an economic benefit to the state and to society, as well as a health and life savings.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've seen a lot of information, but in regards to children and kids smoking, you said there's 18% that are using e-cigarettes now. What is the percentage of people of kids that are smoking regular cigarettes?
11% in Alaska.
11%. Thank you.
And we used to be up over 30%, and since that tobacco tax increase in 1997, we've reduced it 70% down to 11%.
Hmm. Representative Hughes.
Minors are not restricted at present time from using e-cigs in our state. Is that correct?
Under a bill by Representative Seaton a number of years ago, any product containing nicotine needs to be used or is legal only for those 19 and above. However, they are not currently within the system that checks underage sales because retailers who sell e-cigarettes and e-liquid are not required to have a tobacco license endorsement at this point, and that is where the underage sales enforcement program is tied to.
Follow up.
And so if, and I understand there is a bill in play that would address that, so would you expect that minor use of e-cigs would go down if we addressed that and made it illegal for a minor to use e-cigarettes?
That's a very good question. It's typically not just one strategy that reduces tobacco use. It's typically several, one being underage sales enforcement, one being taxes, one being a comprehensive program, and the last one being smoke-free places. They all work in combination to reduce tobacco use, so it will help, but it will help more so if it's done in combination with a tax.
Well,
do you know, do you have any information how much it would curb, bring that 18% down if we just made it illegal for minors to use to possess e-cigarettes?
I do not. I can certainly research it.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Ms. Stone King? Thanks again for joining us today, and I've got a feeling we'll probably see you in the next few weeks. With that, we'll go to Alex McDonald.
Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. For the record, my name is Alex McDonald. I'm the owner of Ice Fog Vapor in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm also a member of the Smoke-Free Alternative Trade Association. I've been vaping for about 3 years now. I opened the shop doors July 2014. Finding this alternative to combustible tobacco allowed me to quit my 19-year habit of tobacco use. The proposed tax on e-liquid and devices is different than tobacco tax. All these things are readily available online. Earlier, the committee heard of tobacco smuggling becoming problematic in states like New York that have high tax rates on tobacco products. With e-liquid and devices, consumers would simply go online, skirting the tax and skirting ID checks that shops provide. Personally, law or no law, you have to be 19 to buy anything in every shop in, that's a member of the Smoke-Free Alternative Trade Association agrees to that. Shops will not be able to compare with online pricing and be forced to close down. Many people will return to using combustible tobacco products, either out of convenience or because the cost of purchasing supplies and devices locally has become cost prohibitive. Taxing vapor products would also punish people that have taken a step to find an alternative to combustible tobacco products. Public Health England, the UK's Department of Health, recently published a report on e-cigarettes. In the opening key messages, the first point that they bring up is that stop smoking services, that would be the equivalent of our quit line, should support smokers trying to quit by switching to vapor products. This bill would harm small businesses around the state and force Alaskans to either return to combustible tobacco products or spend their time and money shopping out of state.
Representative Hilton.
Do you have any questions for me?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. And Alex, the question, do you know how many shops there are across our state now?
Approximately 25, and we all have employees. There's also 8 juice manufacturers that make e-liquid. E-liquid is a simple substance of vegetable glycerin, propylene glycol, nicotine, and approved flavorings. Real crude e-juice can be bought at Walmart. They sell vegetable glycerin there and propylene glycol-based flavorings.
Follow-up?
So how many employees would you say are in this starting industry?
I've got myself, a full-time employee, and then a couple part-time employees. So if every shop is like me, 20 to 25 shops times 4, that's easily 100 people. And that's not including juice manufacturers and people that make mods and such as well.
So those are, excuse me, Mr.
Hello?
Yep.
So those are the people just involved in the retail portion?
Yes.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Yeah, one thing that shops also do is we check IDs. We instruct people on how to be safe with their devices. We help them find what works for them because there's more than one way to evaporate a liquid, and some people prefer one way over the others. We help them with troubleshooting. The shops also provide a great sense of community for people making the switch, and I hear tips and advice daily from people that are switching to people that have been vaping a long time. The report by Public Health England also addresses the youth use, and one thing that they find is that most of the people that try vaporizers are people that already smoke. They've found that even among adults, the use of electronic cigarettes by adults that don't smoke is less than 1%. So, and I see that in my shop daily. Most of the people that come in are tobacco users, either cigarettes, pipes, cigars, chew, all of the above.
Follow up? Please continue.
Yeah. Another thing that the shops do is ensure that people are of age purchasing their products. We're not like an online store where you check a box saying, yes, I'm 18. And we work our best to make sure that minors do not have access to these devices. That's one of the reasons that we're in full support of Senate Bill 141, because it's something we're doing already. If we push people to shop online or order things from out of state, that goes away. It relies on the honor system, and I don't think that's a good deal.
I think we heard Friday that you have to bring in a number of cases either by mail or shipping before tax people will go after you, but it's usually in conjunction with people that are buying and reselling that live here. And I don't think too many of them.
And with e-liquid, it's common practice. I see it especially with military. They order from shops at their hometown because there's a lot of different juice companies, and one shop can't carry all of them. So there is a large online market that we are already competing with, and any tax on devices or e-juice would be prohibited to doing business in this state.
Well, thank you again for taking the time to testify, and with that, we'll go to Greg Connolly. Greg, are you with us?
Good afternoon.
Yeah, it must be late where you are.
It is 7:45 p.m., and this is actually my birthday, so I wish I was in Alaska for my birthday, so rather than on by phone.
Well, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for giving up your birthday to join us today.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Gregory Connolly, and I currently serve as the president of a nonprofit called the American Vaping Association. I'm an attorney, and I've been a leading voice for vapor products since August 2010, which is I was in law school, and after trying to quit with so many different products, finally I quit with e-cigarettes. And I was the volunteer legislative director for the U.S.'s largest consumer organization, CASA, for 3.5 years before forming the AVA to advocate for fair and sensible policies towards vapor products. I'm here tonight to urge you to please reject Governor Bill Walker's proposal to enact a massive 100% of wholesale tax on vapor product liquids and devices. As you consider this bill, consider the debate, consider the finances, I'd like you to keep some points in mind as you consider this bill. The debate about vapor products, it's not about good or evil or white hats versus black hats. These aren't the cigarette wars where it was big tobacco versus public health, big tobacco versus nearly every health establishment, every health nonprofit, every government agency. That was white hats versus black hats. In this debate, this is a legitimate public health debate with people on distinguished experts on both sides. Last year, as the prior speaker said, Public Health England released a 118-page report saying that vaping helps smokers quit, and based on all this evidence, they are going to be at least 95% less hazardous than smoking. The report was endorsed by nearly the entire public health establishment of the UK, the Royal College of Physicians, Action on Smoking and Health, Cancer Research UK. So these organizations that are saying that e-cigs are far less hazardous and helpful to smokers, they aren't quote-unquote purveyors of e-cigarettes. They're public health bodies. These are anti-smoking organizations that are recognizing that nicotine is not the enemy. It's the smoke that kills, the carbon monoxide, the tar. So please, your skepticism to think that, well, I think these things are going to end up being dangerous, that skepticism is welcome. I want more skepticism by legislators. But you owe it to yourself, and I think your constituents, to really look harder at that evidence because there is a lot out there. So tobacco control advocates and activists that are opposed to vapor products, they're used to living in that world of public health versus the monolithic tobacco industry. The tobacco industry, big tobacco, cigarette companies, had nothing to do with the creation of this industry. 65% of the U.S. market is controlled by small and medium-sized businesses with no relation to them, so this tax is going to hit the mom-and-pops in Alaska. Big tobacco is not going to be crying if this tax passes. With regard to adult usage, in September, the CDC released an excellent survey where they asked smokers and ex-smokers about their habits, and they found that among smokers who reported quitting in the past year, 22%, nearly a quarter, were using e-cigarettes. So that number doesn't even include people who used e-cigarettes to quit, got down to 0 milligrams of nicotine, and put that product away. So we are seeing a great deal of interest in these products by smokers looking to quit. And there are billions of dollars in Medicaid savings to smokers quitting, as the previous speaker talked about. State Budget Solutions put out an excellent paper that I will submit to the record on this topic, talking about the billions of dollars in Medicaid savings. In regard to the data on vapor product usage by youth, and how differently. It's important to look at the data closely because it can yield a picture that is inaccurate or misleading. From 2011 to 2014, as youth experimentation with vaping products rose, you saw the most dramatic decline, the largest decline in teen smoking in the multi-decade history of two federal surveys. And so the idea that these products are acting as gateways is belied by this evidence. Not to mention that nationwide, when you actually ask teens, how many days of the month are you vaping? That's a way to actually see if somebody's actually dependent on nicotine. Only 2% of American youth reported using e-cigarettes 20-plus days of the month. Virtually all of them already were smokers. And another survey from the federal government found that about 80% of youth who had vaped in the prior 30 days said they weren't using nicotine. And so I will wrap up by noting that this 100% tax, absolutely not justified. I agree with the concerns by the representative about low-income populations, because a lot of them, they are the ones who won't go online to order. They'll just keep smoking. For many, making the switch to vaping is more expensive than smoking. It will absolutely send people online that do have that capability. You're even hitting devices, so you're going to have $100, $150 devices taxed at 100% of wholesale. And I'd just like to make one unrelated point. It's not my fight, it's not my war, but you should know, I'm surprised someone from the marijuana lobby is not testifying on this bill, because those shops that are going to be open in Alaska, and they are going to be selling devices that aren't designed to vape e-liquid, they're going to be selling devices designed to vape herbs. It's completely different technology, but it would still be an electronic smoking device under this bill, and so I believe that the product would still end up taxed. So you're going to have these businesses that are paying their tax on their marijuana still having to pay the enormous tax on their devices. So that's a concern. It's not of mine, but I wanted to make you aware of it. It's something that I researched before the hearing. And I would be happy to answer any questions. You have two great groups in Alaska, Clear the Air Alaska and Safada, but I'm also a resource, and thank you so much for allowing me to testify.
Representative Keto.
Thank you. I've got two questions for you. You had indicated earlier in your testimony that you had used vaping products to quit smoking. So are you not vaping now, so you've quit completely, or do you still vape?
No, I do vape. About 40 years ago in the British Medical Journal, a doctor wrote that smokers smoke for the nicotine, but they die from the tar. So I'm a true believer in some cognitive benefits of nicotine. I feel uncomfortable when I go without vaping for days at a time, whereas if I was a smoker, I was uncomfortable if I went an hour or two without one. So I do still continue to use nicotine. I just do not smoke.
Thank you. And as a member or representative of the association, where does the nicotine come from that goes into these products?
Most of the products contain nicotine. If they do contain nicotine, there are many nicotine-free products, but if they do contain nicotine, it's either derived from tobacco or it is made in a lab synthetically. That is a product that's just come to creation in the past 2 years, the synthetic nicotine, and will probably be more used more and more as time goes on.
Follow.
Thank you, and I guess that kind of contradicts your statement that this will not have any effect on or that the vaping doesn't benefit tobacco companies if they're supplying nicotine. Do you know if tobacco companies also are producing the lab type of nicotine?
No. Big Tobacco does not own the tobacco field. Big Tobacco does not run any operations that they've made public at all, and they have to make a lot public. Big Tobacco doesn't run any operations where they are taking nicotine from the tobacco plant. That is farmers in Sweden, Switzerland, maybe India. Those are the people that are benefiting from the vapor industry right now. In fact, the very same companies that GSK and Pfizer, when they make their nicotine patch and gum, they are buying their nicotine from the very same companies that these vapor companies are.
Thank you.
Follow-up? Is that it? Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions for, I believe, is his name Gregory?
Yep.
Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, for being here. Interesting testimony. You may have heard my question earlier as far as how the e-cig tax and the cost for the consumer would compare to just a regular cigarette. And I'm wondering if you think if we were to tax the 0 to 100% for e-cigs, whether some of those users will go to regular cigarettes because of the cost, or is it pretty comparable, the cost? Will you think they'll stick with the e-cigs?
Well, the threat is twofold. I think that for smokers who have already switched to vaping, you're going to see those people will buy online, or they'll find ways to get untaxed sources, so, or they'll make their own. People who have only partially made the switch, people who continue to smoke 4 cigarettes a day, but they vape the rest of the time, I think those people are definitely at risk of just saying, this isn't worth it anymore, it just doubled in cost. The biggest threat is to the existing smoker in Alaska today who has not tried to switch, because when you go into one of those stores, to get a good vapor product, you can go into a 7-Eleven and you can get an e-cigarette for $6, $7, the equivalent probably to a pack of cigarettes without the local taxes. But those products are kind of junky. You go into a vape store and you buy your first device and your first e-liquid and a replacement set of coils, you're looking at $80, $90. So you take that and you bring that tax up to, even if it went up to 100, 110, any price raise will lead some, and there's some more emerging evidence about this, about when you present smokers the option of switching to e-cigarettes, and then you say, well, it costs this much, and we're going to raise it this much, then this much. As that price goes up, the desire and the willingness to try and switch to it goes down. So I hope that answered your question. It is very difficult to compare the two because the products are so different, and so vaping patterns differ so majorly among users.
Hello.
I know it's difficult to compare, but just can you help us just generally average one e-cigarette versus one cigarette if this bill were to pass? Can you give us a rough idea of the cost of one regular cigarette versus one e-cigarette, including this proposed tax? I was just going to say, I'm wondering about low-income people who might not go online to buy. If they're using an e-cig, which I would think would be, it sounds like it's healthier than using a regular cigarette, will they switch to regular cigarettes or will they stay with the e-cig, which is cheaper?
I think they will stick with cigarettes. I'll simplify this. I'll talk only about the convenience stores. The convenience stores sell e-cigarettes that probably would compare to 3/4 of a pack of cigarettes. And that e-cigarette or that refill cartridge is going to be about $7 or $8 retail. $5 wholesale. And so you double that cost, it is going to be more expensive than a pack of cigarettes in many parts, if not all parts of Alaska. So yes, this tax, would hike the tax so much that for many smokers, especially those who don't have, who can't go online, this will make vaping more expensive than smoking.
Yeah, thank you. I have two other questions. So I don't know if somebody's in, but okay. I'm wondering whether you would feel like you could state that if we pass this tax on e-cigarettes, do you think it will raise our cost of Medicaid in this state because those low-income people will go to regular cigarettes?
Well, the projections that you have for how much Medicaid is going to cost your state over the next 20, 30 years, those projections assume certain smoking rates. And so that anything that occurs, any disruptive technology that comes out that lowers that smoking rate is going to decrease your costs over time. So it's a little difficult to say that we're going to see massive swaths of people who had quit smoking go back to smoking. But I think you're going to see less people quitting in Alaska compared to the 46 states that have no vapor taxes, and of course this would be the worst tax in the nation.
And follow up?
Sure.
So what I'm hearing you say, let's say that technology, there's no change except this bill were to pass, that that Medicaid costs would go up because the low-income smokers might be more apt to purchase regular cigarettes. And
yes, over the long run, Alaska will pay more in Medicaid because people will continue to smoke, or some will who are on their way to quitting won't complete that journey. So, yes, in the long run, Alaska will pay more Medicaid costs than a state that decides to allow adults to switch unimpeded.
question.
Okay, a new question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned earlier that the, I can't remember what you called, e-liquid, I think you called it.
Yeah.
They don't all contain nicotine. This bill doesn't separate out the ones that do or don't, so we'd be taxing all substances. Can you tell us what percentage of the e-liquids don't contain nicotine that are typically purchased across the country, and if you have that information specific for Alaska?
Sure. I don't have the information specific for Alaska. There was a very large survey done in the UK that found that 15% of adult vapor product users were using zero nicotine. The number in America from going around and going to vape shops and going to conventions is probably in that range, 15 to 20%. But I would still, because nicotine is not a carcinogen, nicotine is not what is killing smokers, nicotine is just what's creating dependence. I would oppose any taxation, but yes, one particular problem in this tax that is not a problem in other areas is the fact that it taxes non-nicotine products. So the idea of defining a product that taxing a product that contains not even nicotine as tobacco kind of baffles the mind.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Connolly, you said that this would leave us with, the highest tax rate in the nation. Did you mean on e-cigarettes?
Correct.
Okay. And what are the other states doing with e-cigarettes in terms of regulation, and specifically the excise tax rate?
Sure. The first state to tax vapor products back in 2010 when I think it was probably 2 months before I'd even quit with e-cigarettes, was Minnesota. And Minnesota redefined tobacco product to simply include anything that contains nicotine. And that's a 95% of wholesale tax. And so that tax does not include the devices. It only includes nicotine. And the public health suffering of that tax hasn't been felt that much in Minnesota because they are able to pay the tax on the nicotine when they bring it in, and you have in-state manufacturers that supply nearly the entire market in Minnesota, so that 95% tax is not felt by the consumer in the same way it would be here. And then the other three states, North Carolina and Louisiana, have 5 cents per milliliter of nicotine-containing liquid, and Kansas, they, in a budget crisis, they put 20 cents, and there's now some hope that's supposed to go into effect in July, but there's some serious talks in the legislature of delaying that because that's going to be bad news for small businesses as well.
So just to follow up, so there are only three or four states that are impacting your industry at all, or this industry?
Four states, and I apologize for not bringing this up. Washington, D.C., that's probably the most comparable to the tax you proposed. Washington, D.C., passed 68%, 69% of wholesale on all vapor products, including devices. And at one point in time, there was 5 vape shops in D.C. As of 9 months ago, 8 months ago, and I think we are now down to 2 or 3. And if there is 3, the third one is very much thinking about getting out of the business.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Connolly, I'm hoping somebody on the committee will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe we had testimony from the director of the tax division that if the vaping device is packaged without any product, that it wouldn't be taxed. But if it had any product with it, they wouldn't be able to tell what it was, and they would apply the whole tax to it. Is that people are nodding? I think that's how the bill is currently written.
I think it's very vague because it says batteries are not to be taxed. So there are devices that are sold separate from their batteries. You charge the battery separately, and you put it in the back of the device. So in my reading of the law, if you are selling a device that is not sold, that does not have a battery literally modded into it, I think you are going to be paying the 100% tax.
We can certainly clarify that, and we'll put the a response from the tax division into the file. Are there any further questions for Mr. Connolly? Seeing none, I'd like the record to reflect that we were joined by Representative Culver earlier this this afternoon. Yeah. stepped out. But with that, I think we will be hearing the public testimony beginning on Wednesday. And with that, we will adjourn at 4:05.